A logo appears in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, a black and white logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In a black and white film, titles appear over swirling stars. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Greta Garbo as Grusinskaya the dancer. John Barrymore as the Baron. Joan Crawford as Flemshin the stenographer. Wallace Beery as General Director Prizing. Lionel Barrymore as Otto Kringlein. Louis Stone as Dr. Otternschlag. Gene Herschelt as Senf the Porter. In Grand Hotel by Vicky Baum. Copyright 1932, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Directed by Edmund Goulding. American play version by William A. Drake. Recording director Douglas Shearer. Art director Cedric Gibbons. Gowns by Adrian. Photographed by William Daniels. Film editor Blanche Sewell. Cast Robert McWade as Meyerheim. Pernell B. Pratt as Zinovitz. Ferdinand Gottschalk as Pimenov. Rafaela Ottiano as Suzette. Morgan Wallace as chauffeur. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Sheila Ray Lau. Read by Rena Baskin. Major funding provided by the U.S. Department of Education. For more about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at wgbh.org/DVS. Now, telephone operators wearing headsets patch wires at switchboards. In the hotel lobby, a man wearing a porter's uniform stands in a phone booth.
Hello. Hello. Hello, is that the clinic? This is Sen, the head porter, Grand Hotel. How's my wife? Is she in pain? Isn't the child coming soon? Patience. Would you have patience?
This is Otto Kringlein.
On another phone.
Is that you, Heinrich? Oh, Heinrich, listen, I've got to talk very quickly. With every minute costs 2 marks 90. You know that will I made before I had my operation? Well, I want you to tear it up. Huh? Well, I came to Berlin to see a great specialist about that old trouble of mine, you know, Heinrich. It's pretty bad. She says I haven't long to live. I say he says I won't live much longer. No, it isn't nice to be told things like that. You plague and bother and save, and all of a sudden you're dead. I want to get something out of life. Listen, Heinrich, I'm never going back to Friesdorf. Never. I'm staying here at the Grand Hotel. It's the most expensive hotel in Berlin. All the best people stay here. Even our big boss, Prizing, is staying here. I'm going to tell him someday just exactly what I think of him.
Now, a broad-shouldered man wearing a tailored suit uses a phone.
Hello. Hello, miss. This is General Director Prizing. I want my home in Friedrichsdorf, please. Hurry, here. Hello, hello. Is that you, Mama? How are the children? What news have you from the factory, dear? Yeah. Is your papa there? Good. Hello, Papa. Is that you? Yeah. The conference with the Saxonia Company is set for tomorrow morning, Papa. Yeah. Yeah. If the merger does not go through, we are in very bad shape, Papa. Yeah. Yeah. Everything depends upon news from Manchester. If the deal with the Manchester Cotton Company does not go through, we are facing a very bad situation, Papa.
I'm Suzette. Suzette, Madame Grusinskaya has made. Madame will not dance today. No, she will not go to the rehearsal. She did not sleep all night. There is something preying on her mind. No, I gave her a tablet of Verinol. She's sleeping now.
This is Baron von Geigen. Look here, I need money or I can't stay at this hotel much longer. So I've laid the groundwork. I know the exact position of her room. And I've made friends with her ballet master, Pimenov.
Listen, Heinrich. I've taken all my savings. Everything. And I'm going to enjoy spending it. All of it. It's terribly expensive here, Heinrich. Oh, but it's wonderful.
I can't. I'll lose my job. It's like being in jail.
Rely on me, Papa. I will make this merger go through. I never fail.
Oh, poor madame. Her mind is tortured. I'm afraid she will...
I don't need advice, thanks very much. I need money.
Music all the time. Oh, it's wonderful.
Grand Hotel. People coming, going, Nothing ever happens.
Now, the lobby bustles with men carrying walking sticks and women wearing hats and fur-trimmed coats. From high above, we watch guests flow through the lobby and move around the ring-shaped front desk. Upper floors open to form a circular atrium, which stretches above the lobby. Suzette, her hair pulled into a tight bun, approaches the desk.
Madame, I will not want her car.
Madame Gittinskaya's car is not to be brought.
Meanwhile, Baron von Geigen strides through the lobby, carrying a gift box and holding a leash. The leash grows taut, and he turns to see a woman petting his dachshund. Rolling his eyes, the Baron lifts the small dog, tucks it under his arm, and walks off. He nods to a bellhop.
Here.
Yes, Baron?
You know, Adolphus is very vexed with you.
Yes, Baron?
You didn't take him for his walk this morning.
Your door was locked, Baron.
You might have knocked. Don't you realize? That's why they don't like little dogs at big hotels. The doors are locked. They can't get out, you see?
Yes, Baron.
I want you to take him for a good walk. You understand?
Yes, Baron.
And don't bring him back till he's exhausted.
No, Baron.
Hey, wait a minute.
He reaches into his pocket.
Quite all right.
The Baron walks away. At the front desk, he leaves the gift box with Senf, the head porter.
Kaya's car is to be brought.
Madame Kuzinskaya's car is to be brought.
Madame Kuzinskaya's car is to be brought.
Good evening. You sent us to Madame Kuzinskaya?
Yes, Baron.
Thanks very much.
The Baron steps over to an older man.
68.
Good evening, Mr. Pimenov.
Good evening, Baron.
How's the beautiful lady?
Kuzinskaya? Well, to tell the truth, Baron, tonight we're a little bit nervous.
Oh?
Were you at the theater last night?
Of course, I'm always there when Kuzinskaya dances.
Well, last night was not so good.
Oh, I thought she was splendid.
Now, a thin man approaches Senf.
It's Mr. Preisingham. I'm Dr. Zinovich.
Mr. Preisingham, we discussed.
Mr. Preisingham. Oh, here you are, Dr. Zinovich.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting.
Waiting. I've been waiting for news from Manchester.
No news yet?
No news.
That's bad. That's very bad. You can't hold out unless you merge with the Saxonia Company.
Yeah, I know.
But the Saxonia Company will never sign unless your firm is definitely tied up with the Manchester people. They don't have to. I wrote and told you that.
Yes, I know. I'm very, very much worried. But I have my agent in Manchester. I'm expecting a telegram any minute.
Well, you'll have to create a good impression. Seem optimistic. Don't even mention Manchester to the Saxonia crowd. Be clever.
Oh, no, I cannot do that, Dr. Zinovich. I'm used to making my deals on a solid basis. I'm an honest businessman, a good husband, and a father. I have nothing to conceal. I could not live happily otherwise.
Yes, I know. We'll go someplace and talk it over. I'm expecting a stenographer. Send her to Mr. Preising's room, please.
Now a white-haired man with a burn scar on half his face.
Letters for me?
No, doctor.
Telegrams?
No, doctor.
The Baron watches the doctor step over to Senf.
He almost seems to be waiting for something, but it never happened.
No messages.
War dropped no, in here. And
frowning, the doctor looks the Baron up and down, before. Then steps no, between Baron. Kringlein and a woman back waiting back at the desk.
Pay some attention to me. I have no time.
Kindly wait one moment, sir.
Doctor, anyone ask for me?
No, doctor. Yes, madam. We're holding the rooms now. 5 bedrooms and 2 sitting rooms. How many in your party, madam?
Let me see. There's my mother. 2 sisters, my
sister. Oh, now, really, this is an
You will kindly wait one moment, please.
That makes 9.
Yes, madam. You wish to have a room's help?
Yes, please. And then
I won't wait any longer. I've been here a very long time.
Oh, that's all right.
The woman leaves.
Look here, I've waited 3 days before I got a room at all. When I finally got one, what kind of a room was it?
Very nice room. Inexpensive, sir.
I didn't ask you for a cheap room. When I came here to live, did I ask you for a cheap room? Well, how did I?
The scarred doctor eavesdrops.
I can't wait. Every day.
The desk clerk confers with a manager who approaches Kringlein.
I can't live here for 2 weeks, maybe 3. Heaven only knows. I can pay whatever you want. I'm tired and ill. I can't wait.
The gentleman has a complaint.
The gentleman is dissatisfied with rule number 559.
Yes, I have a complaint. I think it's a perfectly fair complaint. I came here from a great distance to live at the Grand Hotel. Now, I want a room, a big room. The same kind of a room you give General Director Preisingham.
Baron.
I'm as good as Mr. Preisingham. I can pay for a room the same as Mr. Preisingham. Would you stick him away off in a corner in a little room where the water pipes go bing all day?
Gentlemen can have my room. It doesn't matter where I stay.
That will not be necessary, Doctor. Mr. Kringle, I'll take room 176. It's one of our most expensive rooms. A large room on the front and with a bath. Oh,
with a private bath? Excuse me. Mine.
Certainly, sir.
Exactly what I want. That's very kind. I'll pay for it now if you like.
No, I beg you. Please, but...
Pardon me, sir.
You dropped your little hat.
Permit me.
Thank you. Permit me. My name is Kringlein from Friedenshof.
Oh, yes. I'm Baron von Geigen.
Baron.
Permit me.
To present Dr. Ockenschlag.
Oh, a doctor. Doctor, I'm ill.
I know. When a man's collar is an inch too big for him, I know he's ill.
Well, I must go and dress now. I hope to see you at the theater.
Surely, sir, surely.
Is this gentleman the Baron, too? Unfortunately, no.
Will Mr. Kringline kindly sign?
Yes. I have signed one.
Stepping away, the Baron saunters past a man in a chauffeur's uniform.
Have you a minute now?
I told you not to come into the lobby.
Time's getting short.
How many times have I told you not to talk to me with a cigarette in your mouth?
I want to speak later.
Yes, sir.
The chauffeur leaves through the lobby's revolving glass doors as a shapely young woman carrying a black case enters. Wearing a fashionable black dress with white gloves, she strides toward the front desk.
Mr. Pricing.
Will you go up to 166?
166. Hey, wait a minute!
She dashes across the lobby and crowds into an elevator. Kringlein, already inside, doffs his hat as she enters. On the fifth floor, the young woman and Kringlein step out, followed by the Baron and the ballet master, Pimenov.
Set on the other side of the fence.
Oh, Baron, you're incorrigible. Poor Grusinskaya. How can she receive anyone? She can't.
No, of course not.
Theater, hotels, trains, hotels, theater.
Quite so.
Well, I must turn along. She'll be waking up and calling.
Well, I'm sorry, old fellow, sorry.
The Baron eyes the young woman with the case as she searches for her room. Kringlein, carrying a parcel wrapped in string, strolls along the balcony and admires the atrium. The woman finds room 166 and walks into the dimly lit suite. In the steamy bathroom, she sees Prizing doing toe touches, a towel wrapped around his waist. He drapes another towel over his head, turns, and spots her.
Who are you, please?
She eyes him up and down.
I'm the stenographer.
Well, then, you will please wait outside, please.
Yes, sir.
She scans the room, then places her case on the bed.
Outside, please. Outside.
Take your time.
He resumes his toe touches. She leaves, passing Kringlein and the Baron.
Listen, the burial fund and everything. I've got it right here. I'm going to live. I'm going to have a good time while I can.
That's my creed, Kringlein. Short life and a gay one.
A short life, Baron, and a gay one. That's very true in my case.
You know, I know you won't think I'm impertinent, but, you know, perhaps you might have a little better time if you bought some new clothes. Started out fresh, so to speak.
Well, Baron, I didn't think there was time for that, but it's very kind of you to take an interest.
Friends, then.
Friends, Baron? Mm. Oh, thank you.
Your room is ready, sir.
Thank you. And I may speak to the Baron anytime I see him?
Of course, Kringlein. Why not?
Well, I mean when you're with your smart friends.
I haven't any friends, Kringlein.
You said me, Baron.
Huh?
Friends.
Oh, bless you, Kringlein. See you later.
The Baron shakes Kringlein's hand warmly and pats him on both shoulders. The stenographer, smoking a cigarette, stares over the balcony rail at the lobby below. The Baron joins her.
You know, I've often wondered what had happened to that old porter if somebody jumped on him from here.
I'm sure I don't know. Why don't you try it and find out?
She straightens.
Thanks very much.
Not at all?
He walks away, then turns back and whistles. She looks at him. With a cigarette between his fingers, he points to her, then to himself, then points down and makes a circling motion. She frowns and turns her back. He rejoins her.
Don't you like dancing?
No, not with strangers.
Never?
Never?
Thanks very much.
Not at all?
He walks away again, then comes back.
I say.
Oh, are you back again?
You know, he must be an awful nice fella.
Who?
Whoever's keeping you waiting.
Oh. Have you seen it?
Seen what?
Yes.
Oh, you don't mean 166?
Mm-hmm.
That fat, bulbous neighbor of mine, Mr.
Prizing.
Oh, not you.
Oh, no.
She types in the air.
Work.
Does he sing?
I hope not.
Weren't you playing something?
Yes, the typewriter.
Oh, you're a little stenographer.
Yes, I'm a little stenographer.
That's fascinating. I don't suppose you'd take some dictation from me sometime, would you?
Her smile fades.
Well, how about some tea, then?
Tea would spoil my dinner. I only have one meal a day, and I'd rather hate to spoil it.
Oh, are you reducing?
Reducing? Me? Do I need to?
He studies her figure.
Oh no. It's perfect. You know, I don't think I've ever... But, why one meal a day?
Money. Ever heard of it?
Yes, I have vaguely. But I always thought little stenographers made little pennies.
Very little.
Oh, that's too bad.
Did you ever see a stenographer with a decent frock on?
I have indeed.
One she'd bought herself?
Oh, I see what you mean. Poor kid. Oh, I wish I were free tonight.
Aren't you?
His eyes widen.
What?
Free.
No, darn it, I'm not. But there's tomorrow.
She slowly smiles and stares up at him.
What time tomorrow?
5 o'clock downstairs.
Where downstairs?
In the funny yellow room where they dance.
You're funny.
Tomorrow?
Of course.
Really? We'll dance. Hmm?
All right. We'll dance. Hmm?
Kringlein joins them at the rail.
I wonder if I could remind the Baron of his promise that I might speak to him at any time.
Well, Mr. Kringlein, how are you making out in the royal suite?
Oh, wonderfully, thanks to the Baron.
Baron? Are you a Baron?
Strangely enough, yes.
Then this isn't the Baroness.
Strangely enough, no. Do I look like a Baroness?
You're quite attractive enough to be anything.
Thank you, Baron. You're nice.
Thank you, Miss...
Miss Flem.
Flem.
Miss Flem, this is Mr. Kringlein.
Hello. Flem. They call me Flemshin.
I like that better.
I wonder if the Baron would take the trouble to come to my beautiful room. I've ordered some caviar and champagne. It's very expensive, but that doesn't matter. Perhaps Miss Flem would join us.
Have caviar if you like, but it tastes like herring to me.
It does, as a matter of fact. I never thought of that.
I'm sure my beautiful room will appeal to your artistic sense. It has real velvet upholstery. A1. I'm in the textile trade, and I know. I wonder if you'd like to see my bathroom.
Prizing steps out of his room.
It has hot and cold running water all day. Nighttime, too. I can have a bath any time that I like.
No.
Yeah.
Stenographer, please.
Her master's voice. Goodbye, Mr. Kringlein. Thank you.
Goodbye, funny one. Don't forget tomorrow, 5 o'clock.
Oh, I won't. Goodbye, you.
Goodbye.
The Baron pats her on the rear as she steps into Prizing's room. Kringlein watches the door close and heaves a sigh. He strides over, his jaw clenched. As he paces in the hall, the Baron strolls up.
What's the matter, Mr. Kringlein?
Prizing.
Oh, you know him, don't you?
I know him. I've slaved in that man's factory for years and years. I know him through and through.
Well, sorry, old man.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Baron. Excuse me. Won't you join me in my room? I've ordered some champagne.
Listen, old man, I'd love to. I'll join you a little later.
You know the gentleman we met downstairs with the face?
Well, the doctor, you mean?
Yes.
He's a gay old blade, isn't he?
Oh, he's
Suzette
wonderful.
Steps out of a room with a ballet shoe.
Please, monsieur. Madame is asleep.
See you later. Waiter! Oh, waiter,
please!
Sorry.
Her face tense with worry, Suzette tiptoes back toward the room. She looks at the Baron, who bows formally. Smiling, Suzette opens the door, and the Baron blows her a kiss. Holding her head high, she slips into the darkened room. She sets the ballet shoe down, checks her watch, and steps gingerly toward a satin-draped bed. Wearing a dark, high-collared dress, she leans over a woman curled up in the bed. The woman lifts her head, smooths her wavy hair, and settles back onto a pillow.
Has Madame slept well?
No, I've been awake.
sinking.
It is time for the performance.
Suzette turns on a lamp, and Madame Grusinskaya sits up reluctantly.
I think, Suzette, I've never been so tired in my life.
She rolls her deep, weary eyes and sinks back onto the bed. From a nightstand, she takes a small vial and studies it.
Not even the Veronal could help me to sleep.
Madame Grusinskaya's car is to be brought.
Grusinskaya sits up again, knitting her brow, then peels back the coverlet. Wearing a satin dressing gown, she stretches her neck, rises, and stands behind a desk chair. Holding the back of the chair like a dance bar, she rises on her toes and gracefully extends an arm. She slumps, her smooth, straight features creased with worry. She whirls to face Suzette.
I can't dance tonight. It will pass, madame.
Rubbing her temple, Grusinskaya takes a small pearl necklace from a jewelry box.
Pearls are cold. Everything is cold and finished. So far away. So threadbare. The Russians. St. Petersburg. Imperial Court. The Grand Duke Sergei. Sergei. Is dead. Grusinskaya. It's all gone.
She tosses the pearls to the floor.
Do you know the pearls? If they were to break. The pearls don't break. They hold together and bring me bad luck. I hate them.
Suzette shows her the Baron's gift box.
Again, madame. No card. I think they are perhaps from the same young men. He is at the end of the corridor. Tall. He walks like a soldier. Oh, madame must have noticed how often he rides in the elevator with us. Yes? Oui. Madame, the card is here.
Send it away. I shan't need it.
She takes the phone. Pimenov enters.
Madame Krasinskaya will not require her car. No. No, she'll not be gone to the theater.
Time for the performance.
Oh, the performance, the performance, the performance.
Oh, poor little Lisabetta. She still has her stage fright. It will pass.
It's not stage fright. It's something more.
What? What is it?
Last night there was no applause.
Oh, there was.
That theater, half empty, dancing for those few. I was frantic. I finished. I waited. I listened. But the applause did not come. Nothing. Oh. They're past, Pimenov. They're dead. It's finished.
Another tuxedoed gentleman enters.
Madame, a negligee, and now what, before the performance? What's this you're canceling your car? Say, do you know the time? Or are we all mad? Now, am I your manager? Have we contracts? Have we obligations? Is this the time or I'm blind?
I'm canceling the engagement.
Madame is canceling the engagement. Madame has chosen a funny time for such a funny joke. Tonight there is a line in front of the theater since 6 o'clock. The house is jammed to the roof.
Is it really full?
Doesn't Meyerheim say so? Back to the ceiling. And such an audience. The French ambassador, American millionaires, Princess Ratzfeld.
All right, all right.
She smooths her hair, straightens her posture, and stands.
Hurry, Suzette.
We'll wait outside.
Grusinskaya unties her gown, and Suzette helps her out of it. Now, Pimenov and Meyerheim in the hall.
Poor child. Poor child. How is the house?
Terrible. After this, no more ballets for me. Jazz. Just jazz.
If the house is empty again, I don't know.
When she gets her paint on, hears the music, she'll be all right. I know these people. Here she is. Grusinskaya.
The Baron watches Grusinskaya lead her entourage down the hall. Wearing a long fur coat, she pulls on white gloves as she strides toward the elevator. Suzette follows closely.
Why did you bring the pearls, Suzette? I told you I won't wear them.
Why not?
I'll take them back.
The Baron turns to two men.
No, I don't think I'll be able to join you fellas after all.
Well, why not? We'll wait.
As the elevator arrives, a nurse helps an old, shawl-covered woman shuffle toward it.
Lift! Lift,
wait.
Grusinskaya smiles gently and ushers the elderly woman onto the elevator.
You go ahead, old man. I'll be there if I
wait.
All right.
Anywhere.
All right.
The Baron stays behind as his companions board the elevator. He watches pensively as the doors close, then his gaze trails down the corridor. Downstairs, Grusinskaya, Meyerheim, and Pimenov cross the lobby. The hotel manager smiles and bows as he escorts the group outside.
Madame Grusinskaya's car. Madame Grusinskaya's car.
Car is here, madame.
They pass through the hotel's revolving glass doors and step outside. Above the entrance, a glowing sign reads, Grand Hotel. As the men put on their hats, a limousine pulls up. Grusinskaya and the gentleman climb in, and the car drives away. Now, a hotel clerk answers a phone.
Hello, fifth floor. Good evening. It's just 9:30, madam. Yes, I'll send them up at once.
The Baron? Yeah.
Yes.
Von Geigen's chauffeur walks to room 160. Inside, the Baron lies on the floor with his dog.
Adolphus, I have something very serious to discuss with you.
When you meet little lady dogs on the street that are not dachshunds, you must exercise some self-control.
The chauffeur lets himself into the room.
Ah, we have company.
You're late. The dancer's gone to the theater.
Excuse me, I'm busy. Adolphus? This is a very peculiar thing for one gentleman to say to another. But as a matter of fact, you're the one thing in the world I really love.
She's gone to the theater. Don't you know?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Pearls are in her room.
The others are getting very suspicious of you. I had Amsterdam on the telephone today. They think you're scared.
I've been very careful. I'm waiting my chance.
Waiting your chance? You're too much of a gentleman. That's the trouble with you.
I told you I'd got those pearls tonight, didn't I?
Need any help?
No.
Have you got the skeleton key?
No.
Why not?
One reason. There's a perfectly charming floor clerk outside who sees everything. She'd see me enter a room.
I could take care of her.
How?
Chloroform on a handkerchief from behind while you're on the job.
Oh, no.
Why not?
Poor kid in the first place, it'd give her a rotten headache. I know all about chloroform. I had it in the war. Besides, you know, she's rather pretty. She has a very nice line.
You're no good for this business.
No.
To you, it's just a joke.
The Baron gets up from the floor and squarely faces the chauffeur.
I don't like your tone.
No?
No. Get out. Leave it to me. Be ready to leave on the night train for Amsterdam.
With the pearls.
With the pearls. Get out.
The tall chauffeur turns, grinning smugly, and leaves. The Baron, with a pencil-thin mustache and combed back hair, stares at the door, then takes a breath and checks his watch. Pulling on a pair of leather gloves, he turns to his dog.
You, there is a nasty man, Adolphus. He'd eat his young.
Now in Prizing's room, Flemschen types.
Both parties have fully agreed that this merger can only result in mutual advantages. Mutual advantages.
He watches her cross her shapely legs.
Moreover. Moreover.
Moreover.
Oh, did you get that?
Yes, I got it.
What did you say that Justice Zimovitz called you?
Flemschen.
Flint?
Mm-hmm.
That's odd.
What?
Oh, I mean, who were the gentlemen you were talking to in the car that night?
Well, some people I know.
You know a lot of gentlemen, don't you?
Oh, not many. I haven't time. I'm busy now looking for a job. Oh, I'd love to be in the movies.
Why the movies particularly? I mean,
only in mutual advantages. Moreover?
You're a very unusual stenographer. You're pretty enough to do other things.
Oh, I do.
She shows him a magazine.
Well, you see, I have a rather nice figure, and I pose a lot. Art studies, you know. Like that?
Hmm.
Got 10 marks for it.
Is that you?
Mm-hmm.
You?
Hmm?
Well, isn't that interesting? That's lovely, isn't
Moreover?
It? Moreover. Moreover, the possibility of the successful termination of the Cotton Cutlery should throw a great weight into the balance. Into the balance.
Balance.
Why, your hands are sunburned, aren't they? Huh?
Yes, that's from skiing.
From skiing?
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine took me to Switzerland last month.
To Switzerland?
Mm-hmm.
That must have been very nice.
I went to Florence once, too.
With the same man?
Oh, no.
No. Oh, don't misunderstand me, Miss Flem. I'm a married man and have grown-up daughters.
All right.
Bigger than you are. Come in.
A bellhop enters and hands Prizing a telegram.
That's all. Excuse me, please.
Flemschen browses through her magazine while Prizing opens the telegram, his wing collar and bow tie tight around his neck. As he reads, his eyes widen and his brow creases. Flemschen watches him look up from the paper and grimace. He throws the note down. Wringing his hands, he paces the room. Flemschen puts down her magazine, picks up the telegram, and reads.
Deal with Manchester, definitely off. Is that something terrible?
Yeah, that doesn't mean that at all. That's a mistake. That's wrong.
All right, I'm sorry. Do you want to go on?
No, you come back in the morning and we will go on with the dictation before the conference.
She smiles and quickly gathers her papers.
Oh, Mr. Prizing, if you find out you won't need me in the morning, I wish you'd please let me know, because, well, men like you who come in and out of town are often unreliable. And after all, if I don't work tomorrow, it's just, well, good night.
She flits out of the room. Prizing looks again at the telegram.
Deal definitely off. Why, we could be smashed.
Behind him, out on a balcony, the Baron creeps past a window, pausing to look in. At the far end of the balcony, he looks back toward Prizing's window, then climbs over the railing. He jumps to a narrow ledge between balconies and flattens himself against the wall. On the sidewalk, five stories below, people pass by unaware. Wearing a crisp suit and his hair slicked back, the Baron inches along the narrow ledge toward another balcony. He leaps for it and catches the wrought iron railing with his hands. Dangling high above the street, he struggles to hoist himself up. Meanwhile, Prizing slowly walks out onto his balcony. He searches the evening sky, then wearily rubs his chin and forehead. Inside Grusinskaya's room, the Baron rummages through a trunk and finds a jewelry case. He opens it and draws out a long strand of pearls. The Baron admires the necklace for a moment, then closes the jewelry case and returns it to the trunk. Pausing in the middle of the dark room, he looks again at the pearls, then victoriously clenches them in his fist. A smile flashes across his lips as he drops the necklace into his pocket and heads back out to the balcony. Outside, he freezes at the sight of Prizing on his balcony. Prizing sits down to smoke a cigar. The Berlin cityscape stretches out before him. The Baron glances warily around, then steps back into Grusinskaya's room. As he moves through the dark, he knocks a telephone off a table. The Baron picks up the handset and listens for a moment. With a satisfied nod, he gingerly sets the telephone back on the table and returns the handset to its cradle. He straightens, scans the floor for more obstacles, then heads for the door, giving a tug on his shirt collar. He turns the doorknob. It's locked.
Boss, I'm going into 170 now, madam.
The Baron glances around frantically, then hides behind the door as it opens. A chambermaid enters. Wearing a long white apron and carrying folded linens, she turns on the light and closes the door. The Baron is gone. As the maid crosses to the telephone, the Baron spies on her from behind a closet door.
Hello? No. There's no one here.
The housekeeper.
You are late. What have you been doing? Everyone says come back, come back. They won't get out of their room.
Housekeeper speaking. No, she isn't here.
Suzette rushes in and grabs the phone.
Madame, what's the matter? Hello, hello, Mr. Pimentov. Have you found her? No, she isn't here. Yes, I'm...
Meyerheim.
Minimoff, what's happening? No, I haven't found her. Who's dancing? The play? Oh, well, how was it? Good. All right, you keep the show going. This little trick is going to cost Madame a suit for breach of contract.
Madame is ill.
Her nerves. No. All about my nerves. Who is she? Where does she think she is? Russia?
Grusinskaya leans in the doorway, still in costume.
Well?
I want to be alone.
Where have you been? I suppose I can cancel the Vienna contract?
I just want to be alone.
You're going to be very much alone, my dear madame. This is the end.
He dons his hat and leaves. Suzette ushers out the housekeeper and chambermaid. The maid curtsies as she passes the dancer in the doorway. Grusinskaya trudges into the room, a cape hanging off her shoulders. Grusinskaya strokes Suzette's face, then takes the room key from her. Guiding Suzette out into the hall, Grusinskaya closes her door. She leans against it and turns off the overhead light. Crossing the room, now dimly lit by table lamps, she lets her cape fall to the floor. A breeze ruffles her wavy chin-length hair as she closes the balcony door. She locks it and draws the heavy velvet drapes. In the closet, the Baron watches Grusinskaya sit on the floor, surrounded by the billowy white tulle of her costume. She removes her ballet shoes, caressing each one and holding it to her cheek before setting it down. She pulls butterfly details off the shoulders of her dress, then stands and moves away. The Baron watches. He emerges from the closet, then steps cautiously toward the balcony door. He glances over his shoulder, then dashes behind the drapes as Grusinskaya re-enters. Tying the sash of her long silk robe, she heads toward a dressing table. Grusinskaya searches through a cosmetics case. She finds a small vial, holds it up to the light, and examines it closely. The Baron continues to observe from behind the velvet drapes. Clutching the vial, she starts back across the room, then hesitates by the telephone.
Western Theatre, please. Mr. Pimentov, the ballet master. Grusinskaya. Hello? Hello, Pimentov? I'm at the hotel. I couldn't go on. I couldn't.
How's it going? Well, who's dancing? Dupré? Well, how's it? Oh, I see. They didn't miss me at all. Good night, Pimentov.
She tips back her head and drops the phone from her ear.
They didn't even miss.
Her gaze falls to the phone. She frowns at it, then holds it to her ear.
Hello? Yes, I'm sorry. I finished.
Knitting her brow, she hangs up the telephone.
I always said I'd leave off when the time came. And I would trouble about a Grusinskaya who dances no more. What would she do? Grow orchids? Keep white peacocks? Die. That's what it comes to at last. I'm not going to wait.
She clenches the vial and stands. The Baron steps out from behind the curtain.
Don't be alarmed, madame.
Who are you?
Someone who happened to be hiding in your room.
Why?
I often come here when you're at the theater.
Why?
Just to be alone in your room, to breathe the air you breathe. There's no need to call for help, madame. Permit me. I couldn't help hearing. I couldn't help knowing what you were about to do just now.
He takes the vial.
I could have left by the window unnoticed, but I risked being discovered. May I say something, madame? You're so beautiful. It tore my heart to see you in despair like that.
She turns away and sits, slumping over her knees. He crouches beside her.
What on earth have they been doing to you? Oh, you have everything to live for. Please don't cry anymore.
She faces him.
You must forgive me. I've had a very trying evening. I was so alone. Suddenly you were there.
She holds her hand to her face and stares up at him. He gently returns her gaze, a brief smile touching his lips as he shakes his head.
Why do you look at me like that?
I had no idea you were so beautiful. I'd like to take you in my arms and not let anything happen to you, ever. How tired you are.
Yes, tired.
And, alone?
So alone.
You mustn't talk Russian to me.
Strange man.
Am I so strange to you?
Maybe not so strange now. You know, once when the Grand Duke was alive, I found a man hiding in my room, young officer. Later on, I found him dead.
Well, that was Russia.
Her dark eyes search his face. A smile begins to form on her lips.
Who are you?
Someone who can love you, that's all. Someone who's forgotten everything else but you.
You could love me?
I've never seen anything in my life as beautiful as you are.
Her gaze falls. She glances about the room, stiffens her posture, then stands. Finding the room key, she hands it to him.
You must go now.
I'm not going. You know I'm not going. Oh, please let me stay.
But I want to be alone.
That isn't true. You don't want to be alone. You were in despair just now. I can't leave you now. You mustn't cry anymore. You must forget. Let me stay just for a little while. Oh, please let me stay.
He holds his face close to hers. Her smile returns.
For just a minute, then.
They gaze at each other, their faces inches apart. She offers her hand and he presses it to his lips. Now, the scarred Dr. Otternschlag guides a staggering Kringlein down a hall.
Oh, no, doctor. The champagne and those girls in there dancing, those beautiful silver things with the ice and the caviar.
The doctor notices Kringlein's dented bowler hat.
I don't care. It's life. Life.
Mr. Kringlein, you are drunk. Good night.
Good night.
As the doctor releases him, Kringlein reels, catching himself on a doorframe. Dr. Otternschlag dismisses a waiter delivering wine to Kringlein's room. Kringlein enters alone and leans back against the open door. He staggers backward as it swings shut behind him. A battered suitcase sits on the floor of the swank Art Deco suite. Kringlein stumbles into a chair, then steadies himself in front of a bureau. He checks his reflection in a round mirror.
Mr. Kringlein, you're drunk.
Strands of hair hang under his boulder, partially covering his round spectacles. He carefully places his umbrella and hat in the top drawer of the bureau. The hat is too tall for the drawer. Kringlein pounds the hat flat and closes the drawer. A light switch catches his attention. He turns off the lights and surveys the darkened room. With a wide sweep of his arm, he flips the switch back on.
Grand hotel.
Kringlein steadies himself on the bureau again, then slowly teeters into the bathroom. Returns carrying a pint-sized bottle of spirits. Grinning at the bottle, he stumbles over an upholstered chair and lands seated in it. He heaves himself out of the chair, lurches forward, and catches himself on the bed. Upright again, with his gaze still fixed on the bottle, he continues his unsteady path toward a bedside table. He pulls out a pocket watch and examines it closely. Pocketing the watch, he eyes the bottle one more time. Nauseated, he sets the bottle aside, then flops down on top of the bed's satin coverlet. He rolls over, pulling the coverlet around himself, and lands on the floor. Now at the hotel switchboard.
Grand Hotel, good morning. Who is calling? Madame Grzinskaya. Oh, Mr. Kremenov. But no, Madame Grzinskaya cannot be disturbed.
The surprising calls to 162 for the day. 162.
Now, prizing in a conference room.
A man in the textile industry must know Manchester.
Yes, you know, there's a lot of business to be done with the Manchester Cotton Company. They have the whole English market right in their hands. Have you any connections with Manchester?
We have a lot of good connections in England. Naturally, we would.
I mean with the Manchester people.
Oh, please, we are here to discuss the merger. Let us begin at the beginning.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Is Baron von Geigen in?
In a corner, Flemschen uses a telephone.
Too bad.
Since on the 11th of June this year, when the first negotiations for our merger between our respective firms was entered into, both parties have fully agreed that this merger can result...
About 5 o'clock?
What do you want to know about is Manchester?
Just a second before I get through. I'm laying before you here the last general statement of the concern. The capital, the plant, the machinery, and, for instance, we'll take, mop rags.
I'll call you right back.
What do you want to know about is Manchester?
Yes, Mr. Pricing, that's what we want to know.
Please, I would rather wait for Justice Simovitz before I commit myself. Please. Now, to go ahead with the merger. You realize that this merger is a great advantage to the Saxonias, of course.
Oh, now let's talk like adults. When you first approached us...
We did not approach you.
Letter on file September 15th would indicate that you approached us.
That letter is a response to a tentative feeler sent out by you.
Please. Tentative my foot. And a month before this, your old father-in-law comes to me very privately and scratches at my door.
Why, we did not take the initiative.
You did take
the
initiative.
We did not take
the initiative. You took the initiative.
Tell me with the sentence.
I see the conference has already begun.
Zinovitz enters.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Gerstenkorn.
Good morning.
I am in Krauss, sir. I beg your pardon, please. Excuse me, please. I'm glad you're here. These gentlemen at Crosswords, would you try, Justice Zinovitz, and iron out the situation here?
Certainly.
Right here on the top, please.
Certainly, if you will allow me.
Thank you very much.
Well, gentlemen... The situation seems to be perfectly clear.
Yeah, yes. And how clear is Manchester?
Manchester?
Yeah.
Have you said anything about Manchester, Mr. Prizing?
Why, no, sir. I cannot commit myself at this time about Manchester.
Quite right. Well, gentlemen, since on the 11th of June of this year, when the first negotiations for a merger were entered into...
Now we're going to begin at the beginning.
As you remember it, when you approached us...
We did not approach you.
I'm sorry you did. I say you did approach us.
We did not approach you.
You did not approach us.
You approached us.
Now, Grzinskaya and the Baron in her room.
Can you imagine 100 girls in a ballet school, each thinking that she would become the most famous dancer in the world?
She holds his hand.
I was ambitious then. We were drilled like little soldiers. No rest, no stop. I was little, slim, but hard as a diamond. Then I became famous and...
She faces him, reclining on a stuffed chair.
But why am I telling you all this? Last night I didn't know you at all. Who are you really? I don't even know your name.
I am Felix Benvenuto Freiherr von Geigen. My mother called me Flix.
No. flicks. God, sweet. And how do you live? And what kind of a person are you?
I'm a prodigal son, the black sheep of a white flock. I shall die on the gallows.
He drops his head onto her hand.
Really? I haven't a bit of character? None at all.
No?
No, really. You know, when I was a little boy, I was taught to ride and be a gentleman. Then at school, to pray and lie. And then in the war, to kill and hide. That's all.
She kisses his head.
And what do you do now?
Well, now, I'm a gambler. Running at large like a happy pig, devouring everything of life that pleases me. I really belong in jail.
Oh, what a picture. And what else? What else?
Sunlight brightens her smiling face as she gently strokes his hair. Slowly, he lifts his head and meets her gaze. Blinking, he looks away. He rises, then paces around his chair and returns to stand before her. She takes his hand in hers. Sighing, he rolls his eyes and turns away from her.
I'm also a criminal and a hotel thief.
That's not a funny joke.
You must believe one thing. You must believe that I love you. That I've never known love like this. Until now.
She stands and embraces him.
What is it, Flix? What's the matter?
He drops her pearls into her hand.
Hotel thief.
Her brow creases in disbelief as she looks at the pearls. She glances away, then searches his face. She steps back from him.
Did you come here just for this? That's horrible.
She throws them to the floor.
You may keep the pearls. I don't want them. I'll not denounce you. Hadn't you better go now?
She sits.
Oh, I wanted money desperately. Can't you understand that? That's why I wanted your pearls. I was threatened. I was desperately in need of a certain big sum of money. Oh, I've been following you. I've admired you. But last night, at last, I managed to come into your room. And now...
And now?
I couldn't go through with it.
He kneels before her.
Don't you understand? Don't you?
Her brow twitches as she stares across the room. She turns toward him, and as her eyes meet his, her face softens. A tentative smile spreads across her lips, and she holds his face in her hands. She kisses his mouth, then holds him close to her. As he rests his head on her shoulder, she smiles warmly. She gently blows into his ear and kisses his neck. They part to smile at each other, then melt into a new embrace. Their lips meet in a kiss. In the hall, Suzette arrives at the door. Grusinskaya looks toward the door as the Baron kisses her long, arched neck. Grusinskaya skips to the door. The Baron stands behind as she reaches for the knob.
Who?
Suzette, madame.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning, madame. Did madame sleep well?
Yes, Suzette. Come back in 5 minutes. I'll call you.
But the telephone...
5 minutes. There it begins. Hello? Hello, Pimenov. Good morning. Darling. Oh, Pimenov. Oh, beautiful morning. Yes, very well. Rehearsals? All right, you can come. Goodbye. Have to go to rehearsals. Our train leaves very early tomorrow morning.
Our train?
Yes, for Vienna.
Vienna?
Oh, you're coming with me. Of course you are.
Well, I can't. I'd give my soul to go, but I can't.
Why couldn't you?
I'll try. There might be some way.
Flicks.
Is it money?
Of course.
But I have money. I have enough for both of us.
Oh, no, that'd spoil everything. I'll manage somehow. I'll get it. I have a whole day. I'll be on the train.
Oh, I shall dance and you'll be with me. Then we'll go to Tremezzo. I have a villa there. The sun will shine. I'll take a vacation. 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I don't know. We'll be happy and lazy. And then we'll go to South America. And, oh, it'll be divine. It'll be divine, divine, divine. Be careful on the way to your room now.
I'll be on the train. I'll get the money.
Don't do anything foolish. I'm alarmed about you.
Don't worry. I'll be on the train.
They kiss at the door. Grusinskaya beams as he leaves. From around a corner in the hall, Suzette watches him go. She tiptoes to Grusinskaya's door and listens. With a nod and a smile, Suzette lets herself in and beckons for Pimenov to follow. Grusinskaya gazes out a window. Behind her, Suzette and Pimenov notice two sets of breakfast dishes on a table.
Oh, oh. Oh. Hurry, Suzette. A bright dress. It's a sunny morning. Yes, yes. Pimenov.
She bounds across the room and dances in front of him.
Mahlheim is canceling the Vienna engagement.
Mahlheim is mad. You're mad? We're all mad. Suzette, come.
She tucks a blossom into Suzette's tight bun.
C'est bon.
She puts Pimenov's hat on Suzette's head.
Gru, you're positively radiant.
Pimenov, I have an idea. Everybody, it must have mad music and... I'll explain to you later. Come, you go to the theater. I want full rehearsal, ballet, full orchestra, and come to
set. She hustles Pimenov and Suzette out of the room, shuts the door, then sits on the floor with the telephone.
Hello? Will you get me Baron von Geigen, please? Yes. Baron von Geigen. Chérie, it's you. No, nothing. Good morning, good morning. No, just to tell you, I'm happy.
Now, a poster reads, Grand Hotel, 5 o'clock tea, dancing, American bar, jazz band, yellow room. A bartender in a white jacket shakes a cocktail while another freshens the drinks of two women smoking at the bar. Otto Kringelein, cleaned up and well-dressed, sits at the bar with Dr. Ottenschlag.
I'll have something sweet and cold, please.
Louisiana Flip, sir.
Louisiana Flip? Yes, that sounds very nice. Thank you.
Well, what do you do in the Grand Hotel? Eat, sleep, loaf around. Flirt a little, dance a little. 100 doors leading to one hall. No one knows anything about the person next to you. And when you leave, someone occupies your room, lies in your bed. That's the end.
In Prizing's conference room, Flemschen packs up her typewriter.
And let me say again for the 10th time, you people were quite ready for the merger. You declared yourself fully agreed on all the terms. Why should the signing of these articles be suddenly held up?
I'll admit that we were at one time anxious for this merger. But since then, the Pricing Company have fallen on evil days.
Evil days?
Very evil days.
Evil? Say, listen, haven't I just shown you here where my firm exports to the Balkans 50,000 marks worth of mop rags each and every year?
Mop rags, mop rags, mop rags. We're interested in something entirely different.
What?
Shall I tell them again?
No, no. Why waste time? It's getting late.
You see what we're...
Now, we're going home.
But Mr. Prizing has too great a regard for the certainty.
Now, you've been talking all day. You're a horse now. Good night, Prizing.
You have decided against a merger, huh?
Yes.
Good night, dinner.
The deal is off?
You could call my office.
Slack-jawed, Prizing rubs his face. The Saxolia businessmen gather their belongings and help each other with their coats.
Oh, here,
help you.
Prizing wrings his hands, then takes a note from his breast pocket.
Well, Prizing, I hope you pull through. It's a very bad time to be in such a crisis. Sorry.
Prizing glances again at his note, then dashes toward the group clustering at the door.
Five.
Oh. Here. So you're breaking off the negotiations, all right? But don't you think for one moment that I'm such a fool as not to have something to say about Manchester.
What? Manchester?
No.
Really got something.
The deal is over. Good night, gentlemen.
Now, if you have something definite to say about Manchester,
gentlemen,
we might...
I am at liberty to announce at this time that the deal between my firm and the Manchester Cotton Company has been successfully negotiated.
Now,
the head Saxolia representative removes his hat and gloves.
Well, now, under those circumstances, where are those articles?
I thought it was all over.
Now, under these circumstances, it's quite a different matter.
Yes, but under these circumstances, we might refuse to sign now.
Now, come. Business is business now.
Saxolia's man signs the contract, then places the pen in Prizing's hand. He signs.
I think we should celebrate this with a bottle of wine. All right.
Well, now, good night, Prizing. We'll see you next week and settle all the details.
Next week,
come
yes.
Come on, gentlemen.
I'll call again.
Good night, Prizing. You're a sly one.
As they file out, Prizing sits heavily and holds his head in his hand. Behind him, Flemshin returns from an adjoining room with her purse, hat, and gloves. She whispers to Justice Sinovitz and leaves.
You let me talk myself hoarse and you have Manchester signed up all the time. Why? Well, the deal has been put through.
Yeah. The deal has been put through, yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Prizing hands him the crumpled note. Zinovitz reads.
Deal with Manchester definitely off. Prizing!
Yes, if that's what the world wants, bluff, I can be just as big a bluff as anyone.
You must go to England yourself at once and really see this through.
Yes, I must go to England. I was desperate. I didn't know what I was doing. Now I don't care. This thing sort of goes to a man's head.
What you need is some relaxation.
Yeah. That's it. I want to break loose, Simovitz. I want to drink. I want to maybe go dancing. I want to do anything.
I can understand that after this. That you've just...
Yes. Go on, say it. My lie, but Simovitz, that's the first time in 30 years that...
Prizing paces, stopping at the open door to the adjoining room. He rubs his chin thoughtfully, then peeks into the other room. With his eyebrows raised, he looks around.
There is my stenographer, Miss Flim.
What do you want with her?
Huh?
What do you want?
What? I want to do some dictating. I want to tell my father-in-law about...
She had an engagement in the yellow room at 5 o'clock. She was in a hurry.
In the yellow room?
Yeah.
Zimovitz, do you think that she's pretty?
Pretty as a picture.
You think so, huh? Let's go find her. We'll go get a drink, huh?
Great.
You come along, Zimovitz.
Yes.
You know,
sure.
I don't know... much about women. I've been married for 28 years, you know.
In the yellow room, Flemshin joins Kringlein and Otternschlag.
Good evening, Mr. Kringlein.
Oh, good evening, Miss Platt.
Have you seen the baron?
I'm waiting here for him. I've been with him all day. We had a marvelous time. We were in a motor car, 100 miles an hour, and an aeroplane,
really?
Oh, we had a marvelous time.
She looks him over.
My, how you've changed. You look awfully nice.
Oh, thank you, Miss Platt. I have a manicure, too.
Really?
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Brandon. Wouldn't you have something to drink? It's Louisiana Flip. Louisiana Flip, please.
Have some.
She glances around the room, her thin, arched eyebrows pinched together as Kringlein whistles.
You like music, Mr. Kringlein.
Oh, yes, I love it. It's so stimulating. A man could...
A man could what?
He could do almost anything.
Oh, he could.
Hello, funny one.
Hello.
Sorry I'm late.
Oh, Baron, won't you have a drink? Louisiana Flip.
Well, Mr. Kringlein, how are you now?
Oh, I feel a little strange, Baron.
I'd given you up.
Sorry.
Please, Baron, do have a drink. Louisiana flip.
No, thanks, old man. I'm keeping my head clear.
Dancing?
Huh?
Dance?
Oh, yes. I'd love to.
Watch this, will you, Mr. Kringle?
I really ought to learn to dance. I suppose it's very important, isn't it?
Yes, you should learn as quickly as the time allows. Mm. Believe me, Mr. Kringle, a man who is not with a woman is a dead man.
What have you been doing all day?
Oh, chasing around.
On the dance floor.
Chasing what?
Money.
He leads her through a turn.
You were very different yesterday.
That was yesterday. I served as a surgeon in the Great War.
Back at the bar.
To the end. Grenade in my face. Mm. I carried diphtheria bacilli in the wound to 1920. Isolated 2 years. Well, drink, Mr. Kringle.
Yes.
On the dance floor, Flemshin and the Baron smile.
That was lovely.
Listen, funny one. Do you want to make a man happy?
Oh, I'd love to.
Dance with old Kringle.
Her broad smile falters.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. He's a dear old duck. I feel rather sorry for him, don't you?
You know, you're not a bit like you were yesterday.
Yesterday? No, perhaps not. I fell in love last night. The real thing.
There's no real thing. It just doesn't exist.
Hmm? No, I thought that too. But now I know that it does. Oh, it's wonderful. Come along. Dance with old Kringlein?
Of course. Anything for you.
Oh, you're sweet.
Prising arrives and intercepts them.
Look at it.
Oh, here you are, Miss Lunchin. I must speak with you.
Presently, Mr. Pricey.
No. This is very urgent.
Pardon me. This lady has urgent business with me at the moment.
Insolence. Berlin manners.
Kringlein hops down off his bar stool and bows.
Good evening, Mr. Pricey. You're staying here too, Mr. Pricey?
I'm sorry, but I cannot place you.
Oh, yes, Kringlein at the plant.
Oh, Kringlein, one of our agents.
No. Assistant bookkeeper, room 23, building C, third floor. I'm away sick.
Well, that's very interesting. Good day.
Kringlein gapes after him, then hangs his head and returns to the bar.
Would you like to dance with me, Mr. Kringlein?
Oh, Miss Flem, I've never danced in public.
Oh, come along and try it.
As she leads him to the floor, Prizing bumps his way between them.
Oh, Miss Flem.
Oh, Miss Flemshin, I must speak to you. This is about the dictating job.
Oh, good. When do we start? Tomorrow morning?
No, right now.
You see, we were just going to dance. Do you know each other, Mr. Kringlein, Mr. Pricing?
Mr. Kringlein will be a good friend and not accept your invitation to dance.
Oh, Mr. Prizing, I couldn't think of not accepting the invitation to dance.
I understood you to say that you reported to our plant ill, and you're here in Berlin indulging in diversions which are very much beyond your means. This is very extraordinary, Mr. Kringlein. I think that we should look over your books.
Come along now, children. No fighting. Save that for the office, Mr. Pricing.
Does the world belong to you, Mr. Pricing? Haven't I got any right to live?
I will wait 10 minutes for you, Miss Flem, and if you're not back, it will be necessary for me to engage someone else.
What happened to your dance, Franklin?
Well, we're going now, thank you, Baron. Come along.
I shall remember this, Mr. Kringlein.
Oh, let the poor devil alone. Death staring him in the face.
I did not ask your advice.
No, I think you'd better go away.
We will see who will remain here the longer.
Baron von Geigen, please.
On the floor, Kringlein leads stiffly and watches his feet.
Mr. Kringlein, you mistook at my face and not the floor.
He continues to stare at his feet.
Oh, you're trembling.
I never danced in public before.
You dance beautifully.
Thank you.
That's right.
I'm happy, Miss Flem.
Are you really?
For the first time in my life, I'm happy.
He staggers and steadies himself on a chair.
Are you all right, Mr. Kringlein?
Yes, excuse me. I
to stop a second.
All right, here we go.
As they resume dancing, Kringlein stumbles into her.
I'm very tired. Do you mind if we stop?
Thank you.
She leads him off the dance floor. Watching them, Prizing scowls, then smiles faintly.
I must go back to Mr. Prizing now.
Oh, must you, Miss Flam?
Yes, business. One has to earn a living, you know.
Oh, not you, Miss Flam.
Just another desk slave. Money.
Oh.
She sits at the bar. Prizing shoves another patron aside and joins her.
Thank
Excuse
you.
Me, please. Go ahead, please.
Where's the Louisiana slip?
Would you like a little Coney Island?
Yes. You wanted to see me?
Yes, thank you. You may go, Mr. Kringlein, please. You may go.
Mr. Price, I'm not taking orders from you here.
What is this insolence? Please go away.
You think you have free license to be insulting? Believe me, you have not. You think you're superior, but you're quite an ordinary man. Even if you did marry money, and people like me have got to slave for you for 320 marks a month.
Will you go away, please? You're annoying.
Please.
You don't like to see me enjoying myself. When a man's working himself to death, that's what he's paid for. You don't care if a man can live on his wages or not.
You have the regular scale of wages, and there's the sick fund for you.
What a tale, and what a fun. When I was sick for 4 weeks, you wrote me a letter telling me I'd be discharged if I was sick any longer. Did you write me that letter, or did you not?
I have no idea of the letters that I write, Mr. Kringlein. I know that you're here in the Grand Hotel living like a lord. You're probably an embezzler.
An embezzler?
Yes, an embezzler.
Kringlein gapes. A crowd forms around them.
Back, right here in the presence of this young lady. Who do you think you're talking to? You think I'm dirt? Well, if I'm dirt, you're a lot dirtier, Mr. Industrial Magnet Prizing.
You're discharged. Get out.
You can't do that to him.
No, I don't know the man. I don't know what he wants. I never saw him before.
I know you. I've kept your books for you, and I know all about you. If one of your employees was half as stupid in a small way as you are in a big one...
What are you...
Prizing grabs Kringlein around the neck and shakes him. As men separate them, Kringlein hushes the crowd. He wags a finger at Prizing.
You can't discharge me. I'm my own master for the first time in my life. You can't discharge me. I'm sick. I'm going to die. You understand? I'm going to die, and nobody can do anything to me anymore. Nothing can happen to me anymore. Before I can be discharged, I'll be dead.
the man's crazy. I don't know him. What's annoying? This annoying man.
Baron!
Trouble, Simon.
Excuse me. What is it, Kringlein? What's happened to him?
He's ill.
Oh, I'm sorry, Baron. Oh, poor old Kringlein. You're all right. Give me some whiskey.
No. Louisiana slip.
Now, at the front desk, Senf, the head porter, punches a time clock.
7:05. Time drags when you're tired.
I was in the hospital the whole night, walking up and down the corridor. They wouldn't let me in to see her, and I have to stay here chained to this desk.
Boy, did you find that young lady for Mr. Prizing?
His secretary. Yes, sir. You're over there.
That's all.
His secretary.
Come on, waiter. Come out, please.
In a lounge, Prizing seats Flemshen.
Would you like a little cognac?
No, nothing.
Nothing? One cognac for me.
Very good, sir.
Here.
Well, you wanted to see me.
Oh, yes, yes. Pardon me, Miss Flemshen. I must go to England. It's very important. I must go at once. I have some very big deals involving hundreds of thousands of marks and... I thought I would take along a secretary to take care of my correspondence. You know what I mean. I understood you to say that you traveled you understand.
I understand you perfectly, Mr. Prizing.
What would you want for such a trip?
Marks? You mean money?
Yes.
Oh, well, I don't know. I'd have to figure it up. I'd need clothes and shoes. And it's cold in England in March, and I'd need a suit. You'd want me to look nice, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course, Miss Flynn.
Yes, I thought you would. Well, I should say, 1,000 marks. Is that too much?
No. that is all right. That's all right. Would you like me to get you a room here at the hotel now? And that would...
Hello, Baron.
Will you please pay some attention, Miss...
I'm paying attention.
How do you do? Insolence.
You mean the Baron?
Baron what?
What?
He's a gentleman.
Flemschen watches the Baron stroll across the lobby smoking a cigarette. Kringlein meets him with a bow. The Baron puts an arm around him and gives him an affectionate squeeze. The chauffeur spies on them through a window.
Is the Baron tired?
Huh? No, not tired.
You know, I thought this evening we could go to the casino. That place we passed with the wonderful bright lights.
Kringlein, I adore it. I can't go anywhere.
What?
I'm broke.
No, you're joking.
Isn't it odd?
Oh, a Baron broke.
Von Geigen spots the chauffeur.
Excuse me, ma'am.
He pats Kringlein on the shoulder as he leaves. Wearing a carnation in his lapel, the Baron drags on his cigarette and ambles out to the chauffeur.
I've quit.
You can't.
I'm not going to get those pearls, and neither are you.
What about the money?
I'll pay you back.
How?
I have an idea working in my head.
You might find a bullet through that head.
If you do that, you'll get nothing. Except maybe the police after you. Now, if you wait, I'll pay you back your 5,000 more. I'll see you later.
The Baron strides back into the lobby and kisses Grusinskaya's hand.
Go on, Susette. Are you coming to the theater? I shall dance tonight. How I shall dance. I want to feel it you're there.
She runs to the revolving door and takes an extra turn past the lobby. The Baron follows her outside. She climbs into her limousine and grasps his hand.
I'm worried about you.
Don't be.
You'll be on the train?
I'll be on the train.
Until then,
bless you.
Their lips meet and they kiss each other's hands, and the Baron closes the car door. His pensive gaze follows the car as it drives away. Kringlein steps outside.
Was the Baron joking?
What?
Is it really true?
What are you talking about, Kringlein?
Is the Baron really in financial straits?
Tell you the truth, Kringlein. I must get some money somehow right away.
Well, if the Baron will permit me.
He offers his billfold.
Well, I'd be awfully glad to oblige. You've been very decent to me. 300?
The Baron takes the billfold and tucks it back into Kringlein's vest pocket.
You know, if I could get into a game of some time, I might win.
Oh, gambling?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love that. I've got over 6,800 marks right here.
You know, if we could scare up some men to play, what?
We could go up to my room.
It's a grand idea, Kringlein. Come on.
They pass through the revolving door and into the lobby. Flemschen spins by them unnoticed. From outside, she watches the men cross the lobby. A porter doffs his hat.
Cab, miss?
What?
Cab?
Oh, no. No, thanks, I'll walk.
Now, in Kringlein's room.
4,000 mark.
4,000?
Too high?
The dealer adds to the pot.
4,000 marks.
He deals a card to the Baron, one to himself, then two more. He peeks at his two cards.
Want a card?
Please.
Another card to the Baron.
Thanks.
8,000 marks.
The Baron adds to the pot.
I take it all.
It's a lot of money, Baron.
I need it, thanks.
As he stands at the table, the dealer doles out another hand.
Want a card?
Please.
Another card to the Baron. He studies his hand, then takes a breath and tosses his cards onto the table.
Baccarat.
The dealer gathers up the money. Now Otternschlag deals.
Now, Mr. Kringlein.
Call him.
You?
Baron. Yeah. Will you help me again, please?
I think you'd better help me, Kringlein.
Make your bets, gentlemen.
How much will I bet?
How much is there left in the bank?
$2,500, I'm covered.
You feel like going that far?
With all that money, Baron?
Oh, come on, you're killing him tonight. Go ahead. Go ahead, old man.
Yeah, what'll I do?
You want the card?
Do I want
What do you got? The old highwayman, he has nine again.
I win again. Come on, gentlemen, please. Drink, drink. It's wonderful and sweet. Champagne.
Mr. Kringlein, care to take the bank?
Would Mr. Kringlein care to take the bank?
Yeah, surely I'll take everything. I'll take anything. Come on now, drink, gentlemen. Please drink some champagne. It's expensive and good. What'll I take the bank for?
I'll play for 500.
Oh, Baron, all at once? Why, suppose you lose it?
Oh, what's it all the same thing? Kringlein, come on now, old man.
No?
Deal me two cards. Come on, one to me first. Mm-hmm. One to yourself.
Yeah.
One to me. One to yourself.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, I know. Oh, Baron, it's just all that money.
What have you got?
I've got a nine! Kringlein,
Kringlein? You old robber, you're hopeless.
Kringlein offers him the pot.
Oh, no, it's no use, old man. It's sweet of you, but... You have all the luck.
It's true. I have luck for the first time in my life. I have luck.
Baron, are you up?
All right.
What? Have you finished playing?
Yes, thank you. I recover again presently. 10 or 20 years.
Look, Doctor. Hey,
there you are.
Baron, I win and drink. I drink and win. I win and drink and drink and win. Oh, gentlemen, please don't go. Please don't go yet. Be my guest. Don't go. Oh, I beg your pardon. I know I oughtn't to presume, but I'm so grateful to you. It's been so marvelous. For the first time in my life, I've gambled and I've danced. Now, you gentlemen can laugh, but for the first time in my life, I've tasted life splendor. Life is wonderful, but it's very dangerous. If you have the courage to live it, it's marvelous.
Wonderful.
You don't know anything about that.
Come on, let's go.
You're all healthy and happy. But I, believe me, if a man doesn't know death, he doesn't know life.
This is
your life. Please, gentlemen, don't go. Don't go. Come on. To life. To the magnificent, dangerous, brief, brief, wonderful life.
Kringlein.
And the courage to live it. You know, Baron, I've only lived since last night. But that little while seems longer than all the time that's gone before.
Kringlein collapses into the Baron's arms.
Take him over to the bed.
Turn him around.
Later, Kringlein lies on his bed, his chest heaving.
How is he, Doctor?
It'll be over in a minute.
Over? It's only just begun.
Oh, quiet, Kringlein, quiet. Don't be afraid.
Oh, I'm not afraid, Doc. I'm not afraid to die.
Yeah, you'll be all right. Too much ice champagne.
What?
Hello, Baron.
Hello, Kringlein. You old drunkard.
The Baron pats Kringlein's face. Rolling over, Kringlein closes his eyes. The Baron and Dr. Otternschlag share a glance.
It's late.
On the carpet near a broken champagne glass, the Baron spots Kringlein's billfold. With his back to the others, he sneaks it into his jacket. In bed, Kringlein props himself up and frantically searches his pockets.
What is it?
My pocketbook.
What?
I've lost my pocketbook.
14,000 marks in that pocketbook.
Oh. As Kringlein struggles to get up, the Baron watches, casually lighting a cigarette.
I've got to find that.
Kringlein?
14,000 marks.
Kringlein!
14,000 marks.
He crawls under a table.
Oh, I can't see anything.
You don't know what that money means to a man like me. You've never lived like a dog in a hole and scrimped and saved.
You did not see his pocketbook, did you, Baron? No.
My life hangs on that money, Baron. Nobody ever gives you anything for nothing.
You have to buy everything and pay cash for it. I wanted to pay for my last days with that money.
The Baron pinches his brow as he stares down at Kringlein.
Oh, much finer. I haven't anything in the world but that pocketbook. Every hour costs money. Oh, I must find it.
The Baron stoops and retrieves the billfold.
Here. Here's your pocketbook.
You silly old thing.
There's your money.
Oh, you found it. That's it. Oh, you found it.
I'm very glad he got it back. 14,000 marks.
Yeah. It's a lot of money, isn't it? Well, good night, Kringlein.
Don't go, Baron. Don't leave me.
Oh, I must, old man. It's late. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Please don't go.
I must, old man. It's late.
The Baron pats Kringlein's hand.
Good night. Good night, Kringlein.
Oh, stay a while, Baron.
I'm sorry, I can't, old man. I have no time.
He leaves. Later, in the dimly lit hall, the Baron pauses outside door 170, Grisinskaya's room. He listens for a moment, then raises his fist to knock. Instead, he rubs his forehead, then wrings his hands. Flemshin watches from down the hall as the Baron hesitantly walks away from Grusinskaya's door. A porter carries Flemshin's bag.
Wait a minute.
She turns toward her door. Her dark cloche hat hides half her face. The Baron notices her as he passes.
Hello, funny one.
Hello.
What are you doing here this time of night?
Looking for my room, 164.
Oh, do you live here?
Yes, for tonight.
She gazes down and purses her lips.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Well, such is life, Flemshin.
He goes. Leaning against the wall, she gazes after him, then whistles. He comes back, his brow arched.
You're nice.
He smiles faintly.
Good night.
He leaves.
Good night.
She turns to the porter.
Come on.
He opens the door to her large room, and they step in. She takes bills from her clutch purse as the porter places her suitcase on a veneered sideboard. A bottle of seltzer sits on a nearby shelf.
Thank you, Heather. Good night.
Good night.
The porter bows as he accepts his tip, then leaves the room. A bathroom joins Flemshin's room with Prizing's. Through both open doors, she can see him asleep on his bed. She steps silently through the bathroom and carefully closes his door. Now in the lobby, Grusinskaya's party returns. A clock above the revolving doors reads 1:10. Carrying flowers, Grusinskaya strides through the lobby with Pimenov. Suzette follows with dozens of roses. A bellhop, carrying even larger baskets of orchids and roses, escorts them to the elevator. Two gentlemen greet Grusinskaya.
You were superb tonight. What a success.
Yes, it was a triumph, wasn't it?
Indeed. Madame will return to Berlin soon.
Who knows? Who knows, monsieur?
She pulls a flower from Suzette's bundle and hands it to one of the men, then pats his chest and boards the elevator. On the fifth floor, while Suzette and the bellhop bring flowers to her room, Grusinskaya dances out of the elevator.
Pimenov, Pimenov.
Oh, Groom. Do be sensible. Shall I come and talk about the music now, or not?
She blows him a kiss.
Groom.
No, not tonight.
Pimenov, go and find him.
Oh, Gru.
Pimenov.
She playfully pushes him away and steps lightly toward her room. Three bellhops stride down the hall carrying more baskets and wreaths of flowers. Now, Pimenov knocks on the Baron's door, room 160. Inside, Adolphus the Dachshund lies asleep on the bed. Pimenov tries the doorknob. It's locked. He shrugs, dons his hat, and leaves. Now, in Flemsham's room, she stands before a mirror and smooths back her wavy hair, then opens her suitcase. As she takes out a lace negligee, Prizing enters wearing a robe.
Flemsham.
Hello.
I've been waiting in there for you.
Well, I had to arrange about the trip.
Well, you're very sweet.
Thank you. Won't you sit down?
He sits on her bed and fingers the negligee.
You know, you're entirely different from what I expected.
Different? How?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you were more of a coquette. Not so ladylike.
What did you expect?
Wouldn't you like to call me by the first name?
No, I couldn't do that.
Why not?
Oh, I don't know. One can't get intimate just offhand. I could go to England with you and all that, but... You know, I always say that nothing should be left hanging over. And names are like that. Supposing I met you next year and I said, how do you do, Mr. Price? And you said, that's the young lady who was my secretary in Manchester. That's all quite proper, but... Supposing I saw you and yelled, hi, baby. Remember Manchester? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were with your wife. How would you like that?
We will leave my wife out of this, Flemsham, please.
Sorry.
Oh, I didn't mean that.
He touches her arm. She looks at his hand, then saunters away.
You're very slender, aren't you?
He stands behind her, his lips close to her ear.
You're going to be nice to me.
Yes.
Very nice.
Well, that's what you expect, isn't it?
Miss Flem, you like me just a little bit, don't you?
Well, you're still a stranger to me, but that doesn't matter.
As he tries to stand close, she focuses on setting her travel clock. Through the open bathroom doors, Prizing sees a shadow slide across his bed. He creeps toward it, closing Flemsham's door behind him. Noticing that he's gone, Flemsham smiles. Now, in Prizing's dim room...
Oh, it's you, Baron. What are you doing in this room here?
This your room, Prizing?
Yes, this is my room.
Sorry, old man, I must have made a mistake.
A mistake? We shall see whether you made a mistake or not.
Sorry.
The Baron heads for the hall door.
That door is locked, Baron.
Oh, yeah. Guess I came through here, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
The bathroom.
I want that pocketbook. What do you mean?
I want that pocketbook. You give it to me.
The Baron blinks, then reaches into his vest pocket and pulls out a wallet. He rubs his brow.
Certainly.
So that's how we stand, Baron.
Look here, Pricey. I'm completely at your mercy. I was desperate. It's a matter of life and death. I had to get some money tonight, somehow.
Yes, you did have to get some money tonight. But you're going to jail, Baron. You're going to be locked up. Why, you're a thief.
Be quiet.
Quiet! Yeah, quiet! You, the impudent clown, you danced with Flemsham when I wanted to transact some business with her. You, the nice friend of the nice Mr. Kringlein.
What do you want to do, wake up the entire hotel?
I will wake up the hotel! I'll show him what a Baron you are!
Prizing picks up his phone. The Baron makes for the balcony, but Prizing grabs him. The Baron raises his hand. Prizing clubs him with the telephone. He strikes again and again.
Operator? Yes? Operator, they're having a nice little game up there with that telephone.
Prizing stands and gapes wide-eyed at the floor.
God.
Flemsham steps into the bathroom and listens through Prizing's door.
Baron, speak to me.
She opens the door and sees Prizing's crouched form. Her gaze follows his to the floor. Steadying herself against a wall, she steps closer, a hand pressed to her stomach.
Tried to rob me. He's a thief.
She starts off, but Prizing clutches her arm.
Kill Miss Flem.
She frees herself, but the hall door is locked. Her eyes fixed on the floor, she crosses toward the bathroom. Prizing grabs her.
Oh, Miss Flem, please don't leave me, please, Miss Flem.
She flees through her room and out into the hall.
Oh, Lord.
Oh,
call the Grand Hotel.
Hurry up, they're waiting.
He was in a hurry.
Yes, Flemschen bursts into Kringlein's room. He's asleep.
Mr. Kringlein. Mr. Kringlein. Wake up. Oh, Mr. Kringlein, hear me. Wake up. The Baron.
Where?
Go quickly.
What is it?
The Baron, do you hear me?
Where?
Pricing's room. Oh. Hurry. Oh, hurry.
Kringlein, still dressed, grabs his glasses and billfold off the night table and heads out. Flemschen collapses onto the bed. In his room, Prizing tosses his wallet onto the floor.
Here. Take it, you thief, you. Get out of here.
Glancing anxiously around, he removes his robe. Kringlein arrives.
Mr. Kringlein, he robbed me. He struck me. He's dead.
Kringlein kneels on the floor.
Ben. Dead, just like that. Look, his eyes are still open. He looks so peaceful. It can't be so hard to die.
Here, that pocketbook he stole from me. It's just like it was. I haven't touched nothing.
Kringlein stands. Shadows fall across his anguished face.
Well, maybe he did try to take your pocketbook, but you don't kill a man for that. You don't kill a man about a pocketbook. Oh, poor Baron. He wanted money so badly.
Where is Miss Flem?
I'll take care of her.
That's it. She's working with that man. She enticed me into her room while he robbed me here. I'll tell that to the court.
To the court?
Yes. Mr. Kringlein. I must talk with you before the police come. You say Miss Flem is in your room?
Yes, Excellency.
She's in your room, here. Yeah. No one will ever know that I was with her. You were with her. They will not interrogate you. They will not ask you any questions. You cannot give no testimony. Neither can she say anything.
But, Mr. Prizing, what you're proposing is falsification of the evidence.
My existence is hanging by a thread. A scandal with that woman would mean ruin for me.
But, Mr. Prizing, you've just killed a man.
That makes no difference, Mr. Kringlein.
I beg your pardon. It makes all the difference in the world.
They both clutch the telephone.
Police!
No, please, Mr. Kringlein. I will give you money. I'll give you everything you want. You can go away. Please, Mr. Kringlein.
I have enough money.
No, Mr. Kringlein, please help me. My life is in your hands, please.
Your life? But what about my life? Huh? What about my life when you had it in your hands?
But I can send you back to Friedersdorf. I can give you a very, very good position at Friedersdorf.
Many, many thanks, Mr. Industrial Magnate Prizing.
Don't.
But
please.
I'm never going back to Friedersdorf.
Don't.
He yanks the phone free.
Worry about yourself. Don't worry about me.
No, Mr. Kringlein, please don't call.
Hello. There's been a murder here.
I don't understand you. Murder? Murder?
Who's all
murder?
That drinking.
What? Yes?
What is it?
Huh? Is this a joke? Hello. Hurry up. Someone in 166 says there's been a murder.
At the front desk.
Rising. I'll attend to it.
Now, in Grusinskaya's room, Suzette yawns as she hangs dresses in a large upright steamer trunk. Flowers decorate the room. Grusinskaya steps from behind the trunk wearing a flowing pantsuit.
What time is it, Suzette?
It's 3 o'clock in the morning, madame.
Tired, Suzette?
Is madame not tired?
No, Suzette.
Madame has changed her dress again.
Yes, Suzette.
Grusinskaya's smile fades as her eyes search the air.
The music has stopped. How quiet it is tonight. It was never so quiet in the Grand Hotel.
She turns her attention to a bouquet of roses. Cradling one blossom in her hand, she brings it to her nose and frowns.
Those flowers make me think of funerals. Don't they, Suzette?
It just nerves, madame, nerves.
Suzette, we're going to take a holiday soon.
6 weeks in Cremezzo. I'm going to live like a real woman. Perfectly simple, perfectly quiet, perfectly happy.
Yes, madame, yes.
We'll have a guest, sister.
Certainly, madame. But madame must sleep now. The train will soon go.
Mm-hmm. I suppose so.
Grusinskaya wanders the room, hugging her arms. Pausing at the telephone, she throws a quick glance back towards Suzette, then picks up the handset.
Call Baron von Geigen's room, please.
In the Baron's room, Adolphus the dachshund wakes and looks at the telephone.
We keep ringing. He must be asleep. Oh, come and fetch me, chérie. I'm longing for you. I haven't been asleep. I kept thinking that you might come to me. But he must answer. Ring, ring, ring. Oh, Chérie, why don't you answer the phone, please? Yes, yes. Yes, ring, ring. Oh, where are you? Where are you?
Dawn at the hotel service entrance. Delivery men unload crates from vehicles as a dark horse-drawn hearse comes to a stop among the workers. Chefs supervise as men hoist sides of beef onto their shoulders and carry them inside. Workers pause to watch as porters carry an open wicker casket from the hotel. Police stand by as the porters lift the casket and body, shrouded in white, into the hearse. Somber gazes follow as the hearse pulls away.
46 48.
Now, in an elevator, Prizing rides down with two men.
Are these things necessary?
I'm afraid so, Mr. Prizing.
All right, sir.
He is handcuffed to one of the grim-faced men. The elevator opens at the lobby, and they all step out.
Take care of all that, Mr. Prizing.
The three men cross the lobby as housekeeping staff sweep the floors and wash the glass doors. The clock above the revolving doors reads 6:25. Outside, Prizing climbs into a police car and pulls his hat down over his face. Inside, at the circular front desk, Semp arrives.
The night porter's gone. You're late.
Oh, I was at the clinic the whole night. My wife, poor girl.
Child hasn't come yet.
No. Well, I mustn't let it interfere with my duty.
You won't forget that, will you?
No, sir.
I'm going now. Yes, doctor.
What's this?
A killing in 166.
Killing who?
The big manufacturer Prizing killed Baron von Geigen.
Good heavens, what for?
I don't know.
Man, that's terrible. He was a nice fellow.
They say he was a thief.
Oh, I don't believe it. He was a real gentleman. I know people. Oh, I'm so tired, I can't hardly see out of my eyes. No,
bellhops march in a line to the front desk and stand at attention.
What?
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Sam.
Show your hands.
They extend their white-gloved hands.
Change those gloves.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Dismissed.
Too bad about the Baron. He always felt better when he came along. Always friendly. Such an agreeable fellow.
I tell you a funny thing about the...
Quiet. Good morning, madam.
As new guests arrive, a manager takes Adolphus from a bellhop and hands the leash to a nearby concierge.
You better take charge of this dog. Belong to the Baron.
Yes, sir.
The concierge leads the Baron's dachshund across the lobby. The little dog gets caught in the path of a push broom. Now on the fifth floor, Kringeline steps out of the elevator. A uniformed officer stands guard. Suzette rushes up to the housekeeper.
And they had taken him away?
Yes, wasn't it terrible?
Oh, madame must not know, you understand? Madame must not know.
All right, I can tell it to the maid, but I can't answer for downstairs.
Kringeline enters his room. On a divan, Flemschen sits with her legs curled under her. She stares off blankly as smoke curls from her cigarette. Behind her, early morning sunlight cuts through the blinds and slants across the wall.
Are you all right, Miss Benson?
Yes. I was just thinking about the Baron. Lying there, with his eyes so open.
You loved the Baron, didn't you?
A tear clings to her lashes as she nods.
So did I. He was friendly to me as no man ever was.
What if he was a burglar? They don't kill a man for that.
Oh, he was desperate.
He was?
Yes. He tried to raise money all day. And he laughed. Poor devil. And a man like Prizing has to kill him.
You know, I didn't like Prizing right off.
Why did you have anything to do with him?
Money.
Money.
You don't understand that, do you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Do you really?
Yes, I do. I could take care of you, Miss Flemshin, if you'd let me. I have enough money. 10,200 marks in this pocketbook, and then there's 3,400 that I won last night. That would last a long time. I could win some more. We could travel.
Travel?
Yes, to Paris.
Oh, I've always wanted to go to Paris.
Where, anywhere you like. Here, I'll give you this money that I won last night, the 3,400. And then later you can have some more.
Later?
Yes, when I'm ill, Flemshin. I won't live long. Will you stay with me until...
Oh, look here, that's nonsense. We'll find a great doctor. He'll cure you. They can cure anything these days.
You think so?
Oh, of course, you'll see. Here.
She closes his billfold.
You think you'd have as good a time with me as you did with Prizing?
Why, of course.
Really?
Yes.
You like me better than you did him?
She nods, her eyes brimming.
Oh, you're a good man, Mr. Kringle. A very good man.
You know, I never thought anything so beautiful could come to me.
Tears spill onto Flemshin's cheeks as she stifles sobs. She picks up the telephone and hands it to him.
Look, we'll catch the first train to Paris. Order 2 tickets now.
He holds his head. She takes the phone.
Hello, porter. Yes, please.
She holds Kringeline close to her.
I'd like 2 tickets to Paris. Yes. What time does the next train leave?
Oh, Pimenov.
In the hall.
You'll be on the train.
But how do you know?
Grusinskaya finds the housekeeper.
Baron von Geigen has left? When? How long ago?
The Baron left about half an hour ago. Oh, Gru, cut. We lose the train.
She peers through the partially open door to the Baron's room.
Come along.
Pressing her fingers to her lips, Grusinskaya hurries to the elevator, followed by Pimenov and Suzette.
Here you are, sir.
The doors open, and a top-hatted gentleman staggers out. As Grusinskaya and her companions enter, the man turns, doffs his hat, and sinks to the floor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Madame Grusinskaya's car.
Come along, madam. Come along. The train will be going.
Now downstairs, Grusinskaya anxiously scans the lobby as she hastens for the door.
What is it, Gru? Please come, madam, please.
I'll ask myself.
What is the use of asking? He'll be on the train. He'll be there.
The trooper all
on
board.
Have you seen Baron von Geigen?
The Baron is not here, madam.
Has he gone?
Yes, madam.
We haven't any time to waste. Come, please come, Lizaveta. He'll be there. He'll be on the train.
We have a rehearsal in Vienna tomorrow.
She steps through the revolving door. Outside, she turns her face toward the sky.
The sun. It'll be sunny in Tremezzo. We'll have a guest, Suzette. Yes?
Beaming, Grusinskaya climbs into the back seat of the limousine. Suzette seats herself in front, and the car drives away. A white convertible two-seater pulls up in its place. A young couple wearing leather caps and goggles sits behind its dusty windshield.
Grand Hotel.
He nudges her awake.
Grand Hotel, sweetheart. This way, precious.
He helps her from the car and they embrace on the sidewalk.
Take the car to the garage. Take the bags in, please.
Inside the lobby, staff members smile and bow as the manager guides the couple to the circular front desk.
Will you kindly register?
Certainly.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kaufman.
Mr. Senf, just a moment. Hospital.
A desk clerk hands a telephone to Senf.
Hello. Yes, headquarters. Yes. Yes. What? What? Yes.
What's the matter?
The child has come. It's a boy.
And the wife?
My wife. My wife is well. Hello. The hospital? I'll be over to your lunch hour.
Kringlein, in top hat and tails, escorts Flemschen out of the elevator. A porter follows them to the busy front desk.
My bill and the lady.
Have you got your ticket?
Oh, my ticket.
Ticket for Kringlein.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Kringlein, your forwarding address?
The Grand Hotel in Paris.
Thanks, sir.
How do you know there will be a Grand Hotel in Paris?
Oh, there's a Grand Hotel everywhere in the world.
All right.
Goodbye, Mr. Kringlein.
Oh, doctor. Goodbye, doctor.
Pain's gone already.
Oh, pain. I have none, doctor.
Kringlein picks up a suitcase.
Pardon me, sir. Mm-hmm. My luggage.
What's that?
Oh. I beg your
pardon.
All right,
I'll show
you.
Yes. Hurry. We'll miss that train.
Kringlein bows to a row of bellhops. They return the gesture, and Flemschen tips them.
Come on.
Goodbye, Eric.
Goodbye.
Come on, Flemschen.
I'm coming.
Outside, a driver loads Kringlein's worn suitcase into a taxi.
Please be careful of that.
Flemschen and Kringlein climb into the back seat.
Friedrichstrasse Station.
From inside the lobby, Dr. Otternschlag watches them drive off.
Grand Hotel. Always the same. People come, people go. Nothing ever happens.
Outside, a bus full of new guests stops in front of the revolving doors. Words appear. The end. A Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture. Our view pulls back. We're in the deserted lobby of the Grand Hotel. Fade to black.